Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. I'm delighted to be joined today with Jim Penman. Jim really needs no introduction. He is the man and the name behind the Jim's Group, initially Jim's Mowing. He is the founder, managing director and CEO with over 40 plus divisions in four countries, more than 4,400 franchisees. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with Jim and learning a bit about the business. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. I'm very excited to talk to you, Jim. You know, highly successful business owner and, you know, one of Australia's most recognised franchise groups. It's an incredible business you have.
Yeah, it's been surprisingly successful, you might say.
Surprisingly? Come on, why surprisingly? Stop being modest. Why surprisingly?
No, well, Kevin, when I first started off the franchise in 89, somebody asked me at that time how many franchisees I might have one day. And I said, look, one day, if it really works well, I don't know it will. Yeah. I might one day have 100 franchisees. Yeah. I actually said that.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a lot more than 100 now.
We've done just slightly better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Over what, 4,400 franchisees. It's pretty good number. And that's people that you're supporting. That's people that you're partnering with, and that's people you're working alongside. You know, these people are earning a living, and it's fantastic what yous are doing. And can we go back to the beginning, Jim, just to the story, you know, more so, let's just sort of start on maybe yourself, you know, your story. And from what I could gather, you started the business when you were 28 years old. So that's a little bit later on in life.
Well, in a way, I started it when I was eight. I was in the Cub Scouts, and we had this thing called Bob a Job, where you used to knock on the doors of neighbours and offer to do a job for a small amount of money for the Cub crew. So and then when I did that, this guy across our back fence, Mr. Tapley, gave me a job doing gardening, which was 2 shillings per week, raking his driveway and stuff. So that was right. The beginning of it.
Right.
And I've actually, apart from about 3 years, I've actually done gardening work or been involved in industry ever since. So I did it through most of my childhood. Then I went to I had a gap year after I left school, and I started a gardening business then, just doing some work on an hourly basis. Mm-hmm. And then I was at university for a while. And my whole aim, by the way, was never to go into business or make money. It was I wanted to understand the rise and fall of the civilizations, if you can understand that.
Yes. So yeah, I know you're a doctor of philosophy.
Yeah, with a PhD in history. That's
yes.
Right.
Yeah. So you've always had an interest in that sort of thing.
Well, that was my aim. That's what my life goal was. And I used to do gardening and then lawn mowing as a part-time business, just to keep myself in money, keep myself fluent, and to exercise and being outside and stuff, and I quite liked it. Mm-hmm. And it was only really towards the end of the 80s when I realized that I had absolutely no prospect of any kind of academic career, but I had to look at what you can do. And that time I was $30,000 in debt.
Okay.
And the only thing I knew how to do to make money was mowing lawns. So I started the lawn mowing business full time.
How did you have the confidence to just go and get clients? Were you just talking to friends and family initially? How did that start?
Yeah, just like neighbors at the beginning. Yeah. I didn't do very much when I was a kid, but it was just something that I always did. But, you know, I just like being outside. I loved gardening. I still love gardening, actually.
Yeah.
I just enjoy it. And to me, it's a good sort of activity. It's good for the mind, good for the soul, good for the body.
And when you started off as a profession, or you started off part-time, you said, so you started off part-time doing the lawn mowing itself. Where did the trajectory come from? You know, you start, you know, friends and family initially, you start trying to earn a living, you were in debt, so you're trying to recoup some money to pay off the debts. You know, where did the sort of the motivation come from, or where did the growth come from at that early stages?
Well, it was sort of in the beginning, like when I had my gap here, I just put a notice in the door of the window of the local hardware store.
Yep.
And I got some clients off that,
yep.
Some which I kept. And then when I realized, I actually only charged $1.50 an hour, which even in those days wasn't very much. Mm-hmm. And then I gradually raised it. And then I decided $2 an hour. And then about 3 years later, I decided, well, look, I what if I charge more, like $3 an hour?
Yeah.
Which I had no idea how cheap I was, you see. So I did these little yellow stickers that I printed out in University Union, yeah. And I delivered them around the letterboxes in the neighborhood. And then people flooded and said, oh, you're so cheap, you're so cheap, you're so cheap. So I realized I was undercharging.
Yeah.
And then the next step was when I decided, I wasn't doing very well with girls in those days, okay. And I decided that I needed a car because that would help me.
Help you get the girls and help you at work.
Help me with the girls. Yeah, that was my motivation, which is most for my career, which was, in that I was sadly disappointed. I must. It didn't help at all, but I bought myself a car to pay off the loan. I decided to buy a lawnmower, which was a pretty scary sort of thing, and I used to drag it around. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about that, though, Kevin, is I could charge by the job.
Yes.
So I got this little slogan saying, you know, most lawns $5. Now, you've got to bear in mind that you know, I was making for $3 an hour. Mm-hmm. So $5, you could do two lawns in an hour. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's like potentially $10 an hour, which is a lot more money.
Yes.
And also, it doesn't sound a lot now, but bear in mind, I bought my first house with my lawn mowing income, and that was like $30,000. Mm-hmm. So it was good money. And so I just started from there. And then I did leaflets a lot in the beginning. They worked well, pretty well back in the late 70s, early 80s. And then as it got bigger, I started using local paper. And it was just developed from there, just gradually, bit by bit. Never any massive breakthrough, never any time when I say, hey, this is it. Even after I launched the franchise in 89, I almost sold out quite quickly. I just took me a long time to, hey, this is really not a bad business.
Yeah. So would you say that it was born in the beginning, it was born out of necessity?
Well, yes, of course, because you've got to make a living somehow. And I just got married too. Yeah, you know, I was just, what else could I do?
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't really skilled at doing it. I wasn't a teacher.
Yeah.
I just, all I knew was mowing lawns. And I was pretty good at cutting grass, which I still am, of course.
Yeah. So, then were you confident then, like at that point, what were you feeling? Were you feeling sort of nervous about doing it, or, you know, obviously necessity. So when needs must, you just have to do what you've got to do, obviously. And as the business grew, I mean, you said yourself that it never grew overnight. It wasn't a, you know, dramatic breakthrough. It was bit by bit. But as the time went on, were you ever sort of doubtful that it was the right thing that you were doing, or were you confident?
Oh, often. Before I started full time, I tried different things like a computer shop and a shop to repairing lawnmowers and a sort of tourist development. And I just did all kinds of different kinds of things, thinking that the lawn mowing thing wouldn't really last, wasn't really the big thing.
Yeah.
So it was, when you say it was confident, I kind of always believed I'd be successful. I'm too stupid and stubborn to think I'm going to fail in the end.
Yeah.
But I didn't think the mowing business was it. That was all. I just didn't have any vision for what it could achieve.
Mm-hmm. Were you the type of person that, if for whatever reason that mowing business did fail, would you be the type of person back then that would have rolled their sleeves up and give something else a go and try their best anyway?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I just try different things. I've done all kinds of things. I tried Amway for a time, which was a terrible failure. I've done all kinds of stuff. I just keep on trying things. And I'm sort of the same thing today. We're always trying experiments. I'm just trying different things all the time.
Yeah.
You know, there wouldn't be a day go by I don't have some idea about something we can do different. It's just constant new ideas, new things.
Because I know that you cover a broad range of services. You know, initially it was the mowing, but, you know, you do all sorts of things from antennas to building inspections to fencing. You say, sort of touched on it there, but is that born out of an opportunity as a business owner, or is that born out of an excitement of trying new things? I feel like it's the excitement of listening to what you're saying. So, or both?
Well, most divisions didn't start because I thought of starting a new division. It mostly started because somebody came to me
okay.
and said, I'd like to do something under your banner.
Okay.
Like, you know, I had the idea of doing cleaning back in the early days. And I thought, well, this mowing, the Jim's mowing thing, this is a guy with a beard and a hat. Okay. This is a gardening image.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to have a cleaner carry that around because it doesn't sound like a cleaner.
No.
So we thought, okay, let's do something more cleaning. So I had this thing called Sunlight, Sunlit, and I did this logo with sprays and stuff and sold a couple of franchises using our system.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to get work and it failed completely. And I gave the guys their money back. I said, look, I'm sorry, it just doesn't work. It's not for us.
Yeah.
And then somebody came to me and said, I wanted to do Jim's cleaning. And I said, no, you don't. Terrible idea, because this is a gardening image. And he said, yes, it'll work. And I said, no, it won't. It will not work. It's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And I said, look, we're so confident that it'll work that we'll do it on a partnership basis.
Right, okay.
And So then I said, okay, give it a try. And it did work. One of the many, many times I've been wrong, it did work extremely well. People would look at it because the mowing brand was established. It actually transferred to cleaning. And even if it was the woman doing it, it didn't matter.
Yeah. Just surprising. What was your reservations with it, though? You know, obviously it was a success, but what was it? Was it just more the ideology of it? You know, the brand, the name, or the gardening transferring to cleaning?
I didn't think it transferred to cleaning. I thought it was a gardening image. That was all. I just didn't think, because this is what I used to look like. It's me, actually. If you actually Google Jim Penman, you'll see a picture of me
with a hat on,
with a hat and a beard, and against a trailer with the old logo on it. That's actually the current logo comes from that picture.
So you had reservations that it was transferable, obviously, into another industry, and well, obviously it is, and obviously it was, and it has been replicated many times.
Yeah, a lot of the time it happens too. Somebody came to me, one of my franchisors came to me with the idea of doing Jim's fencing. I said, that's a terrible idea, that won't work. and he said, okay, I'll do it in a sort of a partnership basis, and it worked fantastically. Even now we've got something like 60% of leads unserviced. The biggest problem, we just can't recruit franchisees fast enough.
The growth into the other divisions then was more a case of other people approaching you yourself and saying, look, there's an opportunity here. Potentially to branch into this service industry and use the brand and use the marketing, and you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I had a call this morning from a guy, one of my ex-franchisees in car cleaning, who wants to do Jim's epoxy floors.
Yes,
okay. That was just today, and he was describing the process, and he said that he's got, you know, more clients than they can shake a stick at. It's really, really going well. He described the process with it. Now, I looked up his record. He's a great franchisee, a 4.9 out of 5. So he's a really good customer service. So I said, okay. So I put him in touch with Sylvia, one of my salespeople, and they're going to talk, and they're talking about it. That just happened today. Yeah, now, I don't know what's going to go ahead, but that could be a whole new division.
And that's the thing. There is opportunity out there. You know, there's a lot of people that sit there and sort of say, it's very difficult for small. I mean, it is difficult for small business in the current climate. Yes, but there's still opportunities to be found. There's still things that you can do, and there's still people that you can partner with like yourself.
I don't think there's ever been a time in the history of the planet where there'd be more opportunity to start with nothing and achieve anything. Look, we've got people like who starts, like one of my franchisors, he was a cleaner. Mm-hmm. He was actually a cleaner. He was cleaning toilets, washing floors by himself.
Yep.
He bought a gym's cleaning franchise. Later on, he bought a regional, what we call a regional franchise. He then took control of the cleaning division, set up other divisions like window cleaning, like other things. He runs our contracts system for large contracts. He's also taken over IT. This guy's income is well over $1 million a year and growing
fast.
Yeah, fantastic. And he started cleaning with no capital, with nothing. So what can you achieve? Other people who start, there's a guy who dropped out of school but as early as he quit in like year 8 or something like that, really, really early, and went to work for McDonald's, amongst other things. He's now incredibly great franchisor, earning hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, just bought a regional franchise. He's doing amazingly.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, as you said, I'm a believer is that there's plenty of opportunity out there as well. I believe, you know, it's now or never for a lot of people. They can get out there, and I think it's great to hear someone like yourself saying that, you know, someone at your level actually shouting from the rooftops, essentially, and saying that. It's fantastic, and it's encouraging for anyone.
The world is changing very fast, especially with IT. There's so much happening at the moment in the IT. It's an incredible disruption. The biggest, most profitable companies in the world didn't even exist a few decades ago, like Google and Amazon and Apple, people who ride the winds of change. And the thing that frustrates me is that people have this idea that to be successful, you've got to go to university and you've got to, you know, do lots and lots of qualifications and stuff and then get some credential job. There is opportunities out there. They're just falling on you all the time. Yeah. Just the things you look around, there's all kinds of stuff going on that people can start. I wish people would wake up to the idea that manual labor isn't a disgrace. It's actually a royal road to wealth and success.
No, that's a fantastic way of putting it. And what would you say to someone, though? Because some people find it difficult to identify. You know, someone like yourself, you're an entrepreneur, you're a successful business owner, and anyone that has that similar mindset, they generally will identify the opportunities and they can see them in front of them. But how would someone that's not that way inclined identify the opportunities? What should they be looking for, or what, you know, what's, how do they identify what's right for them?
Well, jobs is good. Go and work for somebody. Find a place to go and work, and just watch what's going on. Yeah. A lot of people who do things actually in business started off in their university years where they were doing a job delivering pizzas, and they end up founding a pizza chain, this kind of thing.
Yes.
Just like I did with lawn mowing. Yeah. So just look around you, and if you look at what's happening, and you'll look at it, and you'll see opportunities. Try and understand it. Try and just understand how the business runs, and what makes it profitable. I mean, I'll tell you what, one of the best business training you could ever do is go work for McDonald's. Now, yep. I suggest you don't eat the food because it's very unhealthy on the whole.
Yeah.
But yep. as a business training yes. system, it is fantastic. And they train people very, very young. Mm-hmm. I would love my kids to go to work for McDonald's. I think it's a fantastic training place.
Yeah, and their systems, their internal systems in terms of the efficiencies and the way that they operate as a franchise and
yeah.
as a business, I think it would be fantastic learning for someone. And that's actually a good sort of segue into the franchising sort of conversation, Jim, because obviously back in the day, you're starting off, you're getting the mowing round up and running, albeit part-time to begin with. The business starts to grow. Do you have anyone around you at that point? Do you have any mentors or someone to have a conversation with when you see that there is opportunity for growth that you can sort of talk it out with, where do I go next, or which direction do I go into?
Look, when I say I'm surprised by what's happened, one of the reasons given is that I have so many weaknesses, so many failures. One thing, I am an extreme introvert.
Okay.
I'm socially awkward to the extent that my wife reckons I've got borderline Asperger's. I mean, I don't pick up social clues. I often yeah. say stupid things, yeah. even more in the past. They're yeah. upset and offensive. I don't even realize it. I still yeah. do it. She's always having a go at me for this kind of stuff. I mean, we love each other dearly, but she puts up with me. So, no, I'm not much of a networker. I'm not yes. much of a mixer. I never have been.
Okay.
So, to the extent that I learned anything about franchising before I started franchising, it was from reading Behind the Arches, which is about McDonald's.
Right. Okay. So you, yeah. So, but you did the research, though. That, you know, that's, so you actually did the work. You did something to learn something about it to make more of an educated decision as to what you were to do next.
Well, sort of. But I mean, I've done a lot of dumb things, though. I make so many mistakes. I go off into business I shouldn't. I get hit up about things and rush off into some new venture and lose huge amounts of money, and it works out badly. I mean, I've done more dumb things in my life than most people. Yeah. Would be enough for 20 lifetimes for most people, but I just keep on trying things. But I'm a voracious reader. I listen to talking books. I read books all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm always getting ideas from all over the place, not just business, but biography and history, economics, social policy, education, anything. I just read and read and read.
I know that it'll be certainly very reassuring for people that are listening to to hear you sort of identify, or at least create awareness that you have failures. You know, some people believe that business owners, certainly at your level again, potentially might think that they're invincible, that they're, you know, that they have all the traits of any successful person or successful business owner. But I think it's very reassuring to hear you say that, you know, that you're not great at everything. You know, none of us are perfect at everything, you know.
That's right. And I think it's important people to realize that you don't have to be some incredible genius and not make mistakes and, you know, be good at everything to be successful. You can be bad at, really bad at most things and still do okay. It's not so much a matter of that. What to me makes a difference is that you got to keep on trying new things all the time. There's not a day goes by, I'm including weekends, public holidays, Christmas, any day, that I'm not looking at what I'm doing and saying, how can I do it better? How can we improve? It's not one big idea. It's tens of thousands of little ideas. Every day I think, what can we do different? How can we do it better? That's the passion. And look, one thing I do have, Kevin, which is a really, really strong personal, I'm very, very buoyant. I yep. don't get discouraged. My wife says, you know those plastic things with the weight in the bottom, and you knock them down, they kind of spring back again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like that.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what happens. Yep. Doesn't matter what goes wrong. I think, okay, that's gone wrong. Lost some money.
Yep.
Made a mistake. Okay, what can I learn not to do it again in the future? Okay, what's the next thing I'm going to do? And I straight back in, bang. I don't even pause for a minute. I don't.
Yeah.
I never get down about things. I never get discouraged. I just say, okay, learn the lesson. One thing I know not to do, let's do something. What else can we do? Just keep on going and never give up.
Well, that's the resilience, isn't it? That's the resilience you're talking about. That's just, you know, brushing it off and moving forward and keep moving forward and keep looking at improving, continual improvements, as you mentioned. You know, it doesn't need to be huge improvements.
The little things. I often do funny things. I don't even know why. You know, I'm the CEO of a company that takes, I don't know, best part of a million leads a year. I personally check through, we survey our clients, and I personally check every poor survey that comes into the system and look at it. And I do that. I'm the only person that can knock them off, which I can if they can prove it on the right thing. But I'm always looking at it and saying, okay, why did this happen? Why did you make this mistake? What could you do different? You should do this and this and this. Or our system could do this and this and this. How can we improve the systems, the IT systems? You know, we're spending something like $5-6 million a year on software development right now. Huge push in that area. A lot of it's looking at how can we make things easier and better? How can we make it easier to give great service? How can we avoid problems and mistakes? How can we avoid doing the things that cause franchisees not to be successful?
Is that what gives you sort of some of the most enjoyment now, is overcoming those things? You know, that challenge, it's like a challenge. It sounds like it's a challenge to you to overcome or to improve or to turn that bad review into a good review. You know, does that excite you? Do you enjoy that?
Yeah. Business is really, really fun.
Yeah.
It's like the most fascinating, complicated computer game in the world. It's just endlessly challenging and interesting and
new levels all the time.
Progressive and new levels all the time and doing different things. And you get paid to do it. This is what a fantastic deal that is. There's nothing like it. It's just so much of a fun. I know one of my problems is I'm a monomaniac. I'll talk about business endlessly. I'm a passionate for it. People are like, shut up about business. Talk about something else.
No, that's what we're here to do.
I'm not talking to you, Kevin, but people do say that to me sometimes.
Yeah. In the beginning, though, were you like that? You know, has that always been in you to enjoy the levels of business, the challenge, the fun? Did you always find it fun?
Yeah, I did. When I was mowing lawns as an impoverished student and I had no money at all because I was looking after myself, working a day or two a week mowing lawns. I'm incredibly stingy, which is one plus thing. Not plus to a lot of people, but it's part of my habit of mind when I had no money at all. It was good. You know, when I was deeply in debt and I was going out and lived in a house, didn't have any hot water for a time. I just hosed myself down with a cold water tap and, you know, I've always had a great enjoyment in life, zest for life, I suppose. And I love what I do. I love doing new things and trying new things.
In my language, they call that being thrifty, Jim. They call that being thrifty, watching your money.
Well, you're coming from where you did, Kevin. You're known for it.
They call that being thrifty. But no, that's how you learn, you know, not to be wasteful. And even, I suppose, in the early days when you didn't have much, you know, that's, you learn those lessons. You learn good behaviours. You learn values as well. Those values have to be consistent with them through the growth, don't you? You know, if you keep those values growth, then you're never wasteful and you appreciate what you have when you have it as well.
You know, there's a wonderful book by Charles Dickens where this incredibly great, admirable, heroic figure is really center stage, and his name is Scrooge. I really admire that guy. he puts all his effort into making a business, doesn't spend a lot. That's the basis of capitalism.
I don't get that. I think you're selling yourself short a little bit there, because I think that, you know, from what I can interpret from the outside looking into the actual Jim's Group itself, now talking about the franchisor model, the franchise model, you know, I get the impression that your franchise in particular, your group, is very much about being transparent. It's very much about working alongside these franchisees. It's a partnership, you know. Unlike a lot of large, you know, franchise groups that are out there, I do get the impression that you're kind of holding their hand to a certain extent. Would that be fair to say?
Of course, yeah. But, I mean, franchisees are our number one clients. Yeah. That's what people who are a franchise got to recognise. Your number one client is not the client out there. We've got lots of those. We knock back one lead in three. Yeah. We are so much work. What we are desperately short of is franchisees, and we simply, even though we're growing, we're doing really well, we're growing 15% per annum right now, we cannot grow fast enough to meet the demand. We just need more and more. So naturally, our effort is looking after franchisees. So, for example, every one of my franchisees has my phone number and my email address. They can contact me anytime, day, evening, weekends, holidays, doesn't matter. They can contact me and they can do things.
I mean, I know that a lot of the franchise agreements and things are quite, you have to tread carefully as a franchisee in terms of what you sort of sign into and what you buy into. And I know that, that's, as I say, from the outside looking into your business, I see that as that you are being very transparent about the relationship, because at the end of the day, that's what it is between the franchisor and the franchisee. It's a relationship, isn't it?
It is not unusual to have 10% of the franchisees in some form of legal dispute with their franchisor. You know, in the whole history of Jim's Group, we have been to court exactly three times with tens upon tens of thousands of franchisees and franchisors, some with very major business. We do all kinds of things to make sure people are looked after and they're treated carefully and fairly. Ours is the only system that actually allows franchisees to even vote out their franchisors, including me. If they're not getting support, just by simple, confidential, anonymous votes, they can vote out the franchisors. They can change to a different franchisor. They can change to a different division. Yeah. Everything, we put the power with the franchisees.
That's kind of goes against the grain with most franchise relationships, doesn't it? Having that power, you know, more towards the franchisee, or at least a higher percentage of it. And was that a conscious decision you made out of, was that from a place of kind of wanting to help people, or was that from a place of, you know, this is the right way to operate the business, this is the right business model?
Combination of both. I have very strong egalitarian instincts.
Yep.
And at the same time, I just knew that the only way to make me successful was to turn my franchisees into raving fans. Look, when I started, Kevin, we were up against, when I had signed my first franchisee, the only reason I franchised was in self-defense. I had a business with subcontractors and stuff.
Yeah.
And this company called VIP came into Melbourne from Adelaide.
Yes,
and they had like 250 franchisees, and I had nothing.
Right.
I had no logos, no uniforms, no nothing. I had this little piddly business. I actually tried to join them to say, I'll just help to build VIP, which they rejected. And then I thought I might try and compete with them.
Right,
and so I went up against them. They had this fancy office in South Melbourne. I was running it from my flat, my basement. You know, it was so primitive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had one big advantage, and that actually killed everything else. Every time that a franchisee came to me, they would say to me, why should I join you rather than VIP? They're so much more successful. They're bigger than you. Mm-hmm. You're running up in your basement. Not necessarily overtly so. And they say, why would I join you? And I said, look, there's some differences in the way we run. I would never bag the opposition. Terrible idea. But I said, here, I'm going to give you a list of all my franchisees, all of them, with their contact numbers. And I want you to go away and ring them.
Yep.
Ring all of them. Ring as many as you want. And then I want you to go to VIP and I want you to get their list and ask them. And I was being a bit pretentious because I knew they wouldn't.
Yeah, they wouldn't. Yeah.
I couldn't give a list. And then they would ring my people and they'd say, Jim is fantastic, looks after me really well. What about VIP? You've got to be joking. Jim's is so much better. It wasn't me that sold it, my franchisees, because they were so happy with what I did for them. And that was the secret of my success. And it was astonishing. You know,
That's the transparency again, isn't it? That's the transparency and the open book mentality, really. I mean, it's very rare that most businesses do that. You know, it's very rare that they have, you know, transparency through their business to their employees, even, never mind franchisees or clients. You know, I think the more successful ones have a higher percentage of transparency, definitely. But obviously it worked in your favor. And so it's born out of self-defense then. Is that what you're saying? VIP come along and then you're kind of going, well, I need to do something here, or, you know.
They'll crush me.
Yeah.
I didn't even expect to be bigger than I just hoped to survive. It was just very... Like, I have a very big emotional thing about customer service. When I was mowing lawns, I used to hate letting a client down. I was one of the first contractors in Australia to have a brush cutter because I hated not doing edges perfectly. I had this fanaticism turning up on time. And I had this, that's why I deal with complaints all the time. But, you know, a few years ago, we started this with surveys, sending out automated surveys. And I just did it because I wanted a better service. I was just... And it has created better service, but the results were just far beyond what I expected. Because as our service improved, the leads just rose dramatically.
Yep.
And we're spending less on advertising. You know, we in the beginning, in the early days, we used to spend massive amounts on advertising. These days, we've given back over $1 million to our franchisees because we can't spend their advertising budget in so many areas. They are so busy year-round. And that reflects the fact that this constant passion for customer service, which I'm always looking at. How can we improve? How can we do better? And you keep on doing little things all the time to improve it. In the end, the responses are overwhelmingly more than you could imagine in the beginning.
So how did you go with actually growing into a franchise system then? Obviously, you read the book you mentioned, but you've had no prior experience of franchise system or systemizing. Now, the advantage is that you know the business, you are the business, so you understand the system that you follow,
yes.
that's successful, obviously, in the... The trick is obviously to rinse and repeat that so that it can be replicated over and over again. But how did you find that exercise of having that process and that system in your head, or the daily routine that you go through, and then creating that into something that someone else can interpret?
Look, I didn't really know what I was doing, to be quite honest. The lawyers kept on, it took me 9 months arguing with lawyers, mostly because they were trying to get me to, what they said, we want you to have more flexibility. I said, nobody runs a business where you give so much power to your franchisees. Yeah. And I said, no, that's the way to do it. I want a system that I'd want to join if I was the prospective franchisee. So I really didn't know what I was doing. But honestly, too, if I look back now, what we did 30 years ago, it was incredibly primitive. We didn't understand things like, you know, when I first started off, the people who were around me were very successful. The further away they got from my office, the less successful they were. Mm-hmm. Our first interstate franchisees, most of them failed, and it took a while to figure out that one of the key things we weren't doing was meetings. So we started running meetings. Then we had to figure out how many meetings, and one every 6 weeks seems to work the best. Mm-hmm. We tried less, it doesn't work. More doesn't work any better. That's the optimum level, one every 6 weeks. And then we tried to work out why some franchisors were so much more successful than others. We tried things like doing annual business reviews, like spending half a day with a franchisee, measured the effects, zero. Mm-hmm. And then we were looking at why some franchisees were so successful. And we figured out the one they were doing, they were ringing their franchisees, not just waiting for the call, picking up the phone regularly and calling them at least once a month. And then more recently, we've discovered that some franchisors are doing it by ringing them weekly. And then we discovered that the nature of the call is doesn't matter so much. It can just be a catch-up call. It doesn't have to be about business. It's just about a relationship.
Yes.
And then the sense of community. But we've learned these things over the years, and we're still learning how to do it better.
Yeah, no, and the relationship word came up again, didn't it? And that's, I think that's the sort of crux of the success for the Gyms Group, is that actually keeping that relationship, forming that relationship, evolving that relationship. Certainly that's what I can hear when I'm talking to you. And I know, like, we spoke about mentors and for yourself, but having a franchisor, I mean, in the beginning, for anyone starting a business, there's always that element of doubt and the confidence. And you had that yourself, I guess, to a certain extent in the beginning. And having a franchisor and a relationship where you can have some mentorship, you have got on-call 24/7 accessibility yourself. You know, that's a very valuable tool for someone starting out.
You're right. The success is a number of things. Having plenty of leads is important. Mm-hmm. We actually find good training is important. When we actually started doing formalized central training, our attrition rate dropped. You know, just to give you some idea about attrition, which is a big subject with us, if you look at the publicly available statistics, the proportion of people who start gardening and lawn mowing business and clean businesses who fail in their first year is around about 90-95%. With us, traditionally, it was about 17%, about one in six. When we put the training through, the first year we did it, our attrition rate dropped to 10.5%, and it's running at around about 11% now. That's what franchising does. Now, there's a number of things behind that. Why does it work? Okay, lots of leads is important. If you don't have enough leads, you can do free services, which we'll pay you for. That's important too. Having a mentor is important. Having ongoing meetings is important. All these things together is part of what makes people successful.
Is that how your models changed over the period of time that you, since you sort of franchised the business in 1989?
Yes.
Obviously, it's incorporated more of these elements. It's incorporated the training, the mentorship. You know, it's incorporated different things along the way to encompass a larger offering.
Yes, that's exactly right. You change all the time. You look at people too. One of the great things about it, we have got something over 200 franchisors. We look after the franchisees. One of the great things about that is that you get different ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. Like our system of selling franchise is based on a lady called Sharon Connell, who bought a cleaning franchise, became a very successful cleaning franchisor, now runs the dog wash division. And she's got a particular way of selling franchises, which has been astoundingly successful. We're teaching people to do that. That wasn't my idea, that's hers.
Yes.
She's a far better salesperson than I ever was. Mm-hmm. So you learn from everybody. You learn from, you talk to people all the time. Who's doing well? Why are they successful? Why is he growing? Why is she doing so well? Why is her satisfaction level so good? And you work it out.
And is there open communication internally amongst franchisees and yourself and, you know, management levels? Is there an open conversation about those types of scenarios, why someone's performing better? And
we're a very communicative bunch. We talk a lot. Yeah. There's all kinds of meetings and sessions and conferences and things all over the place. It's not very rigidly organized, but it's very, a lot of networking goes on. A lot of people say, and I think this is correct, that gyms feels like an extended family.
What would you say to someone, Jim, if they were thinking of, you know, maybe potentially becoming a franchisee or just starting their own business? What would you sort of leave them with? What would you suggest?
Do your homework. It's the biggest advice I'd give. There are some good franchise systems around. And let me say McDonald's is a good example. McDonald's is a very good franchise business. I would bring as many franchises as possible. Most of our people are pretty good. Even if you were looking at gyms, you still investigate carefully. Do your homework. Spend some time on the road. Go out and do the job with an experienced operator. Have a look at it. Don't just rely on what the franchisor says, how much this person's making. Think about whether you could do it. Could you stand it physically? Would you like doing it? It's very important to do something you love. Spend some time, do some homework. You're going to spend years of your life, you're going to spend money that's not easy to come by. Just investigate.
I know that you're also a man of faith, Jim. And I'll touch on that just briefly, because I know that, if that's okay, you're a man of faith, and that came to you later on in life. And, you know, that in itself, that behaviour and the values of being involved in that community, that's something that's obviously transferable into your business as well, that you live by yourself. But is that part of your culture and your business as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say if you looked at what gyms is about, it's an extreme form of an Australian culture, which is very egalitarian. Australians and New Zealanders are much more egalitarian than, say, Brits or Americans. Yep. We are man of the people, you know, like Bob Hawke, the guy you want to have you'd like your leaders to be out of somewhere you want to have a yarn in the pub with, this
yes.
kind of thing.
Yes.
So that's our culture. And the other culture, part of the culture, is the Christian culture, which is of service. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the example of Jesus washing his disciples' feet, which people don't realize how revolutionary that was. In those days, when Jesus was around, that was the lowest of the low jobs. That was something a slave did. It was very degrading. Occasionally, a really revered rabbi, his disciples would wash his feet as a sign of respect. But Jesus did it to them. Yeah. That was astonishing. And this whole idea that we serve franchisees is a very fundamentally Christian idea.
And being of service, you know, in any business, you're of service to someone, aren't you? And being of service and doing it properly, yeah. and doing it with the proper intent and, to going about it the correct way.
I have nothing but contempt for a business that simply says my only goal is to make profits. Mm-hmm. That is a pathetic way of having a business. We have a responsibility as business owners. We have a responsibility to our clients. We have a responsibility to our staff. We have a responsibility to our franchisees, if you're a franchisor. We have a responsibility to the public. And I tell you what, I reckon that people who look at it that way are far more likely, in my experience, to do well than somebody just says me, more and more money.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic advice, Jim. And before we wrap up, just before we head off, what, you know, you said you enjoy playing computer games. You said you enjoy listening to the books, you know, to some audio books, and you love learning, studying human behaviour. You mentioned as well. What other things do you get up to in your spare time out with Jim's? big laugh.
I spend a lot of time working on my farm. I enjoy working outside. I've got this great organic farm. We're turning about 200 acres into a food forest. It's really, really, yeah, I like church activities. I run a church group, like a Bible study group, where we meet together and have fun. We haven't done it lately, but that's, I don't know, what else do I do with my time? I spend a lot of time with my wife. I adore my wife. We've been married for 20 years now, and we're just crazy in love with each other. So we do a lot of, we date.
Yep.
We do a lot of foolish love talk and stuff. It's very, very yucky and disgusting to the kids, but I love spending time with her and my children too.
Yeah.
I've got 10 children. And
Wow, fantastic. Yeah.
Only one's still at home, but it was great. I went to lunch with Aaron because he's not at school because of the lockdown.
Yep.
And I like to catch up with my older kids. I don't know. Life is fun. I don't go out to party and stuff. I'm not very extroverted, outgoing, but I have a very wonderful life. I can't think there's a happier or more fortunate man on the face of the earth than I am.
No, well, it's great to hear, Jim. Honest, and it really is. And you said business is fun, life is fun, and I think that's a good outlook for anyone personally or in business to try and have a bit of fun in your life and try and enjoy what you do. And you know, everything you've said and we've touched on, I think it's extremely valuable, and I'm really, really appreciative of you sharing it and sharing a little bit about the story and the business. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. I tell you what, I just think it's important to be happy, but to be happy is not a matter of collecting money. It's a matter of doing something that's worthwhile with your life, something that's meaningful, having a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. Money is, God gives us to us as a gift, as a loan to be used for his purposes. It's not just for indulgence.
Yeah, that's wise words, Jim. And if anyone that's listening wants to reach out and learn a bit more about the Jim's group and, you know, potential franchise opportunities, how would they get in touch?
Well, you can go into www.jims.net.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Jim. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. See you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time.